Hello and welcome. Turkey, a member of NATO, has defied threats by the U.S., another NATO member, and received the first shipment of a sophisticated Russian-made S-400 surface-to-air missile system. American officials have warned of severe repercussions, including blocking the delivery of the F-35 stealth fighter jet to Turkey and the imposition of economic sanctions. Turkey, however, has refused to bow to U.S. pressure, saying the purchase is a matter of national sovereignty. U.S. defense officials say the Russian system is incompatible with NATO systems in the region. Turkey responds that the two systems would be located in separate locations. What does a purchase mean for the already uneasy relationship between Washington and Ankara? And what does it mean for the future of the Incirlik Air Base, the storage site for scores of American tactical nuclear weapons? Is it a response by Moscow to NATO's eastward expansion near the Russian borders? These questions and more in tonight's debate. But first, let's get an update from Press TV's Colin Campbell in Washington. Colin, we know that Washington is furious at Turkey for the purchase of the S-400 air defense missile system. What else do we know about the U.S. reaction?
Washington officials are now reintroducing and reexamining what it would mean for that Incirlik Air Base. They know that Turkey is a strategic ally in the region, especially because of its geolocation. However, their concerns are rising over the fact that that Russians may have an inside look at their technology, even though there are reports that the technologies may not be compatible. What this does is it puts into jeopardy the relationship between the U.S. and Turkey, as the U.S. president has already suspended the sale of F-35 stealth jets to Turkey over fears that if they do release those jets to Turkey and they try to find some compatibility with Turkey's recent purchases from Russia, that they'll be able to crack into that technology and Russia will now have added intellectual property knowledge than what it had before over U.S. technologies. This is something that has been talked about for several months now. Just the relationship between the U.S. and NATO and the U.S.'s relationship with Turkey, as the U.S. believes that aligning itself with Turkey would be in its best interest as far as its missile silos and its strategic place in the region. However, Turkey is definitely buckling back and pushing back from a lot of pressure coming from the U.S., being somewhat resentful over the pressure that the U.S. is trying to assert on the country.
All right, thanks a lot, Colin. Press TV's Colin Campbell joining us from Washington. And allow me to welcome my guest for tonight's edition of the debate. We've got senior analyst of foreign policy and focus, Mr. Ian Williams, joining us from New York, and also journalist and political analyst Yusuf Erim is with us from Istanbul. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with our guest in New York, Mr. Ian Williams. Why is the U.S. opposed to Turkey having the Russian S-400 defense system?
Complex of reasons. One is pure protectionism, because the U.S. wants NATO to buy U.S. weapons. It's one of the purposes of the exercise. They have stealthily and sometimes noisily stomped on other weapons projects by other NATO members and tried in general to make people buy U.S. products. There's a huge lobby in Washington to do this. The S-400, it seems as though it's going to be better for Turkey. So they want to sell their weapons systems, their missile systems, which allegedly don't work quite as well. But then they're holding hostage for this, the F-35. And according to some accounts, for example, in the Israeli press, they may be doing Turkey a favor, because the F-35 is unproven. It's coming in at four times over budget and is not really fit for purpose. But it's a huge revenue earner for the United States, and I think it's McDonnell that makes it. But it's not a very good plane by all accounts. Whether Turkey needs it is another story. And you've got Turkey and Israel both vying for it. The US, the UK is buying it rather than developing their own aircraft or the Eurofighters. But there's very heavy pressure. This is commercial pressure as well as political. And then, of course, key to all of this is the political aspect, is that Turkey is NATO, and the U.S. resents the idea that what they consider to be one of their loyal satrapies in the area should be disloyal in this way and buy weapons from Russia. And we've seen the tensions. Erdogan sort of broke with the U.S. over Israel, over the the ship to Gaza. He brokered them over several other issues where the U.S. wanted him to be quiet. But this is in the nature of the new multipolar society. A lot of the NATO members have their own interests, for example, over Iran with the Europeans. Of course, there's always the perennial conflict between Greece and Turkey, where there have been some very peculiar arrangements over the years with NATO. It's been a very fragile juncture there. In essence, Russia is no serious threat to Turkey at the moment. So Turkey is not beholden to the U.S. for the type of protection it used to be.
Let's cross over to Istanbul. We'll bring in our guest, Yusuf Edim. The installation of the Russian system has been deeply troubling to Washington. So where does this deal leave the U.S.?
It shouldn't change anything between Turkey and the U.S. Now, the U.S. needs to realize that Turkey originally wanted to buy the Patriots, as President Trump stated at the G20, but the Obama administration constantly blocked the sale, and Turkey had to beef up its national security, its air defense. I mean, the Syrian conflict showed that Turkey is vulnerable to ballistic attacks, and the S-400 was a very attractive offer, and Turkey decided to go with it. Now, we always hear this Turkey-NATO problem, but the purchase of the S-400 makes Turkey stronger, and anything that makes Turkey stronger makes NATO stronger. So I don't buy that whole Turkey-NATO problem and that it's not interoperable. Yeah, it may be a standalone system, but that doesn't change the fact that it's making Turkey stronger defensively. Now, as for the relationship between Ankara and Washington going forward, we're probably going to see this transactional politics, this real politics continue, which it has under the Trump administration. But there's many, many flashpoints between two countries right now. You have the U.S. partnership with the YPG, a group that Turkey views as a terror organization in Syria. You have Washington providing asylum to the man that Turkey believes allegedly masterminded the July 2016 coup attempt. That's another huge flashpoint. You have the U.S. providing its support in the Eastern Mediterranean to Turkey's rivals, Cyprus and Greece. So this S-400 issue, while it's gotten a lot of press, there's a lot more important, deeper strategic problems right now in the relationship. And maybe 5-10 years ago, this asymmetric relationship that the United States has gotten used to was acceptable, but we're living in a multipolar world right now. The United States is not the only superpower. Turkey can easily go to Russia, can easily go to China, sit down at the table with them, and it's doing this. It's doing this by hedging and diversifying its foreign policy and diplomatic portfolio, which any smart regional power will want to do going forward. So Turkey wants to make sure it has a place with all these superpowers, and the United States needs to accept that. Everything can't be black and white with the U.S. This you're either with us or you're against us attitude has to end. Russia is a superpower that's located in Turkey's near abroad, and Turkey has to have some form of relationship with Russia. It's only natural.
Ian Williams, the delivery definitely sets up a potential showdown between Turkey and the U.S. Washington has long warned that Turkey risks being blocked from receiving the advanced F-35 stealth jet if Ankara acquired this Russian defense missile system. The notion of sanctions has now been thrown around a lot as to how the U.S. would respond to that.
Well, the notion of sanctions and trade embargoes and tariff wars seems never to fall far from the lips of the White House and its spokespeople. I don't really think they're in a position to impose serious sanctions on Turkey, although Turkey's economy recently makes it vulnerable to the type of shocks. But I believe that if Trump were to take action like that against a fellow NATO member, then it would send signals throughout the rest of NATO. You know, what's this alliance about if the U.S. can sanction members of it for disagreeing with them about a commercial purchase? You know, the purchase of this missile system doesn't tie Turkey into the Russian defense system. It ties it, it's a commercial transaction.
Yusuf Edim, in your opinion, what are the ramifications of Turkey, a NATO member country, seeking out Russia's military technology?
That's a question that the United States needs to answer. Why did the United States let Turkey buy the S-400? They should have sold the Patriots a decade ago, 15 years ago when Turkey wanted them. But if you don't provide an alternative, Turkey's gonna meet its national security needs elsewhere. Now, there's a lot of talk about Turkey getting kicked out of the F-35 program, and chances are it looks like it's gonna happen from the rhetoric coming out of Congress. And if this happens, we're gonna have the same situation and the same conditions that pushed Turkey to buy the S-400. You're gonna have an option that Turkey wanted blocked by the United States. Turkey's gonna have to meet its fifth generation fighter jet needs, at least until it develops its own national fighter jet, the TFX, which is expected to be operational in 2028. But there's still a decade, and they're most likely gonna end up meeting that need with Russia, another significant transaction with the Russian defense sector. And we're gonna be talking cats again. We're gonna rewind this whole saga, this whole debacle once again, because American foreign policy right now, at least geared towards Turkey, is very counterproductive to its objectives that it's trying to obtain. This imposition of will is not working. This threat of sanctions is not working. And we're seeing sanctions. They haven't worked against Russia. They haven't worked against Venezuela. They haven't worked against Iran. They're not going to work against Turkey either. Countries are expressing their sovereignty. Turkey is no different. It's going to continue to seek out its national interests and not accept this imposition of will of a foreign power.
Ed Williams, it appears that to the minds of Pentagon strategists, the S-400 deal could be part of President Vladimir Putin's plan to divide NATO. If that's the case, it seems to be working.
Well, you know, from a cynical point of view, Putin's plan to divide NATO, the crucial first step was helping Trump get elected. Because if anyone's divided NATO, it's President Donald Trump. I mean, he's just sacked the ambassador of his closest ally, the British ambassador. He's at loggerheads with Germany, France, Italy, and Britain over Iran. He is at the throat of Turkey. This is no way to conduct an alliance, and you know it's. I disagree slightly. I don't believe Russia is a superpower. It's a lot bigger power than most of the others, but it's not the superpower it once was. But it's a huge regional power. And the U.S. is not the... 20 years ago, the U.S. was the superpower, singular. Now it is. It's still the superpower, but it's only one. It's one amongst many in terms of powers. China, Russia, and others are set to rival it. And in the end, the US does not have the strength to fight on all the fronts. If you think it's fighting militarily in the Middle East on three or four different countries, it's got troops all across the world. It is saber-rattling in the China Sea. It's saber-rattling in the Indian Ocean. It's saber-rattling in the Gulf. And it does not have the resources to back up all of this. It's hopelessly overextended. But it's doing the opposite. President Teddy Roosevelt said you should speak softly and carry a big stick. Currently, the US is speaking very, very loudly and carrying lots of little sticks. It really cannot guarantee or promise overwhelming military force against any of its enemies short of nuclear war. Well, in the words of the Chinese, it's turning more and more into a paper tiger. Now, the more it bullies people, they challenge it, and its actual prestige becomes weakened. It's only in the peculiar circumstances of Britain that they sacked the ambassador, and they sacked their own ambassador because Trump told them to. That wouldn't happen in most other countries. It would provoke a nationalist outrage in return. And that might still happen, because there are historical precedents here. Turkey entered World War I in part because the British confiscated a battleship they built for the Ottoman Navy. these things have potent consequences. You might remember about Incirlik that part of the deal that salvaged the Cuba crisis was the US agreed to move what was then the equivalent of tactical nuclear weapons, the Thor nuclear missiles, from Turkey next to Russia in return for Khrushchev taking the nuclear missiles out of Cuba. People tend to forget that part of the deal. It wasn't very well publicized at the time. And now with Incirlik, it's in a similar basis. Who needs who? The Turks don't need those nuclear weapons to protect them. Nobody's waving nuclear weapons at Turkey at the moment. Iran certainly isn't. Iraq certainly wasn't. The only nuclear power in the neighborhood is Israel. And if anyone thinks that American nuclear weapons in Incirlik are a guarantee against Israeli nuclear weapons, then they really are coming from a different planet. These complications are there, and the White House is not mentally suited for this type of diplomatic and intellectual complexity. I mean, it really can't handle it. It's you're for me or against me, and it's an ad hoc each time. When Trump says something, he wants undying and unswerving support and really can't understand that other nations and other people have different interests from his and from Washington.
Yusuf, anyone would you like to respond to the comments made by Ian Williams? Also, apart from that, I'd like to get your perspective on an issue that probably the U.S. is thinking about, which if Turkey is setting a precedent here, somewhere down the road, other NATO countries could follow suit. What do you think?
Turkey's definitely setting a precedent. I feel that many countries are closely observing the roadmap that Turkey is taking right now with its S-400 purchase and this stance that it's taking. There's many countries that are interested, some American allies. Saudi Arabia is interested in S-400s. Qatar is interested in S-400s. Egypt's interested in S-400s. India is interested. So all these countries are playing a wait-and-see policy to see how the Americans are going to deal with Turkey and how Turkey's going to be able to withstand this American pressure. And if Turkey's very successful in this, it's going to set a precedent for dealing with Russia. And I think that's one of the reasons why the U.S. is trying to come down so hard. This isn't a technical issue. This isn't about the stealth of the F-35. These are all bogus claims. Turkey called America to come to the table, form a working group, bring your technical experts. We'll sit down together, they said, and we'll have the experts sort out the relationship between the S-400 and the F-35, if it's capable of stealing its technology or not. If necessary, the new programming will be written, a new friend or foe identification software. Turkey even offered to invite NATO to come into the working group and put in their 5 cents. But the United States didn't offer that the United States didn't want to take because it would expose these bogus excuses that they have. This is mainly two reasons behind, I feel it's two reasons behind this stance against the S-400. A, it's to limit Russia from selling big ticket items overseas. And the second one is that the S-400 is a very powerful radar, and positioning it on Turkey's Aegean and Mediterranean coast and also on the Syrian border would basically turn the Eastern Mediterranean, the Aegean and North Syria into a Turkish no-fly zone. If Turkey wants to shut down that airspace, it would have the capabilities with the S-400. And the United States does not want Turkey to have this strategic power in the region right now. So I think these are the main reasons. The technicality, they're using that as the excuse because they don't want to use this type of rhetoric against a NATO ally and say that we don't want you to become too strategically powerful. As for the comments my colleague made in from New York, I agree with most of them. The Trump administration right now is definitely outmatched on a foreign policy level. I mean, you have President Erdogan, who's been in power for 17 years, who's dealt with the three U.S. presidents now. Trump is his third U.S. president. He's very well connected overseas, a very close friend of Vladimir Putin's, has very good relationship with Hassan Rouhani, very good relationship with many other world leaders. And the Trump administration right now, it's basically, it's a funhouse over there. I mean, there's no comprehensive policies, no cohesive policies. This type of maximum pressure, this type of imposition of will, and that's not how diplomacy works. That's not how diplomacy works. You have to empathize. You have to meet people halfway. You can't bang your fist on the table.
We've got time for one last question. Ian Williams, it's been a bumpy road since the failed coup in Turkey back in 2016, if I'm correct. Are we looking at the result of this chasm that started widening between Ankara and Washington?
I don't think the election reflects that. You know, funnily enough, you might say that the leftists in Turkey were the ones who opposed the NATO all along, and they tend to be the opponents of Erdogan. So, if anything, he might be uniting Turks behind the president. That's Donald Trump might yet again inadvertently be doing his opposition, the opposition's work for him. It's the question is, what is NATO about? NATO was to protect Western Europe against a feared Soviet incursion. That Soviet incursion is not likely to happen. And then it transmuted into a sort of regional police force. And, you know, from a European point of view, of course, the former East European companies in particular saw it as a get out of Soviet hegemony jail card free. And they're the most eager proponents of NATO. But they're also the less eager proponents of actually spending money and doing anything about it.
And a last question to Yusuf Irim. Do you think that the failed coup and the stance that the United States took with regards to Fethullah Gulen was one of the main components that turned relations between Ankara and Washington as sour as we're seeing it now?
It was definitely a very important proponent of the deterioration ties between the U.S. and Turkey. I mean, this Monday will mark the third anniversary of the coup, and it's still a very traumatic moment for many Turks. And I remember John Kerry's remarks after the coup when he released the first statement, and he talked about stability and continuation, but he didn't mention the word democracy. Many Turks don't forget this. The U.S. is providing asylum to Fethullah Gulen. This is something that's completely unacceptable. It doesn't matter if you are if you are a supporter of the AK Party, if you're a supporter of the opposition, if you're a supporter of the Nationalist Party. Nobody in this country likes Fethullah Gulen. He is public enemy number one. He's uniformly considered the mastermind of the 2016 coup attempt. And for the United States not to allow him to have his day in court in Turkey and extradite him to Turkey, your NATO ally, after all the evidence that's been given, I mean, diplomacy is trust. Okay. Diplomacy is confidence in your partner.
Thanks a lot. We're fresh out of time. General, sorry to interrupt you there. We are fresh out of time for this edition of The Debate. Thanks to senior analyst at Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams, joining us from New York, and also journalist and political analyst Yusuf Erim, joining us from Istanbul. Thank you for contributing to the program. Also, special thanks to you, our viewers, for staying with us on tonight's debate. Good night, everybody.